Just for the record, there's 15 minutes left and I'm going home. I nearly went home when that try was double movement, but decided to stay. What a shower of shite.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to What Would Brian Bevan Say? I'm Rob London, Windsor II. And with us entering the Jubilee month of June, where are my two Julian and Gregorian podcasters? Firstly, he represents the astrological sign of June, twinned with a perfectly balanced alignment of shitistics and rants, with a personality bigger than the mass of Jupiter, our very own Gemini, or known in his heyday as the Gemini Park Dogger, it's Sam Sankey!
Hello, Your Majesty.
And also, he's our comical Terry and June. No, not Terry Scott, although Terry's boss was called Reginald Marsh in the show, a character played by actor Sir Dennis Hodge. So welcoming our very own Sir Dennis, great Scott, it's Dennis Waywell!
All right.
Now, boys, I think you've both been away, haven't you? Sam sent me some lovely pictures this week. There was some masonry in the background that didn't look like it was from the north of England, Sam. Where have you ventured to?
Oh, Hereford, Wye Valley. Area of outstanding natural beauty, apparently.
Oh, very nice. Mm. And are we allowed to mention, Dennis, your mobility purchase?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's legal. I haven't pinched it. I got a camper van last week, so I'm venturing into the world of camper vanning. Went down to Devon, Dorset, tried a few beers out. That'll come out a bit later on. Settled on a Dorset knob.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. Well, I think before we go any further, we should probably all raise our glasses, shouldn't we? Because the Queen, Her Majesty, was crowned on June the 2nd in 1953, and this week celebrated 70 years on the throne for her Platinum Jubilee. Oh. So here's to her.
Yeah.
Didn't have Dennis down as a royalist. I thought he'd be swearing by now. But
I wasn't going to mention it, and I was thinking, are we really the royal? What do we think about the royals and stuff? And I'll just let it go because it's quite a celebration, no doubt.
Well, we're not the only ones celebrating the Queen's birthday, because in 1,082 days, Wire will celebrate their Platinum Championship Jubilee.
Yeah, it'll be something to be proud of, isn't it? It'd be more like smashing glasses when that comes round.
Jesus. Well, before we start talking about the debacle of last night, I thought the only way to sort of pull this all round, boys, was to have a Queen of Warrington quiz. Now, we're just sort of moving into June and the fact, you know, it's summer months and less competition amongst us, possibly. I thought you could work together. So I'm going to ask for your answers together. And the pass mark is 66%. You need 66 points to get through, lads. So the first question. In 1926, the year of the Queen's birth, Warrington finished 16th in the championship table with a record of played 38 games, winning 18, drawing 1, and losing 19. St Helens that year would finish 4th, but another Merseyside club would finish top of the table. Who were they? This is for 25 points, lads. This is
a
biggie.
If we're working together, Sam, I've got in my mind Runcorn and then Liverpool.
Cheshire, though.
Oh, fuck. It stinks.
Liverpool St Helens were the rugby union team.
Hmm. I'm going to have to hurry.
It's going to be a border change.
Pat Highton.
You're going for Highton.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Well, you've just lost 25 points, boys, because the answer was St. Helens Wreck. It was basically a team from Pilkington's. They originally played rugby union. They were banded together in 1898, but they joined the rugby league competition in 1913.
Whoa. Can I just make a formal complaint already? You said a team from Merseyside. It would have been Lancashire then. Thank you very much. Therefore, invalid question. Therefore, we didn't get it wrong.
No, we'll get points.
Dearie me. Well, you're not having any points for Highton. Bloody hell. Question two. In 1953, Elizabeth would be crowned queen, and it would be Warrington's best ever season. What three trophies did Wyre win in the 53-54 season? There's 5 points for each. You really need this.
Well, did we win the Challenge
Cup? Well, Dennis, it's the Challenge Cup and the Championship, but what was the third one? Would it be the Lancashire Cup, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say Lancashire Cup. Oh, did the Locker Cup suddenly get introduced around that time?
Really, we should know this, shouldn't we? We've probably read about it umpteen times and should just know it straight away.
There's just so many cups for us to think about, isn't there, Sam? I mean,
come on, what's your answer?
Challenge Cup, the Championship and the Lancashire Cup.
15 points, well done, Sam. Oh. Very good.
Sam and Dennis,
I helped. The Locker Cup. I think it could be the Locker Cup. It came around about that time.
In 1977, we celebrated the Queen's Silver Jubilee. And it was during this year Australia were busy picking their 1978 Kangaroo Touring Squad. Warrington would beat Australia at Wilderspool 15-12. But Great Britain would go on and lose to Australia in the Test Series 2-1. In the final deciding test at Headingley, Australia won 23-6. Three of the scores that day came from one player that had played for Wyre, one player that was currently playing for Wyre, and one player that would go on and play for Wyre. Who were they?
Presumably Bob Fulton was one.
10 points for each. 10 points for each. Yes, you've got one. I'll give you that one.
Come on, it's your era really, Sam. You're 10 years older than me.
It's even before my time that.
I can't think. Stuck there, Rob.
You've got us on that.
Come on. No. Welsh school teacher played centre for Warrington. John Bevan.
Said he was Australian.
I know.
No, I said three of the scores that day came from players
assuming they were all Australians.
Sorry, did I mention Merseyside again? And the last one was Les Boyd.
I was about to say Boyd, but I wouldn't have got Bevan. I was thinking all Australians.
Right, you'll never get this one. In 1979, Queen visited Warrington to take a walk around the newly opened Golden Square. Which Radio 1 DJ announced to the nation that morning of the Queen's visit?
we've got Dave Lee
it's
Travis.
It's going to be Dave Lee Travis.
Let's just go with that.
I didn't think you'd get that. Well done. It's very good. No idea you get that one. In 2002, the Queen celebrated 50 years on the throne with her Golden Jubilee. In the same year, Warrington would see three different head coaches at Wilderspool: Steve Anderson, David Plange, and Paul Cullen. How many players that season made an appearance for the first team? And I'll let you have it within two.
Good question, that.
It's probably going to be quite high with everybody doing their own thing.
Late 20s, I think, Dennis, what? I think.
Late 20s?
We usually have a squad of 25. We could have played it. We could have played in a relatively easy match where lots of... should we say 26, maybe?
I'd go higher.
Go on. We've got it within two either way.
Yeah, 28.
28
then. It was 37. Bloody hell. I was going to say 30, but it wouldn't have gone 37. Bloody hell.
And the final question, by the way, lads, you failed. The final question. Yeah. In 2012, Her Royal Highness reached 60 years as the head of state and celebrated her Diamond Jubilee. Warrington would start the 2012 season with three new signings. One went on to represent England six times. One went on to represent England 29 times and Great Britain 4 times, and one had already played 5 games of State of Origin and represented Australia 12 times. Who were they?
Matt King, the State of Origin, and Australia. Could it be Ryan Atkins for the England one, the first one? But the Great Britain one. Say the second one again, please, Rob.
Second one had... he represented England 29 times and Great Britain 4 times.
It was 2012. Was that too late for Morley, was it?
You can't ask questions like that, Sam. Just for the listeners, I'm holding up loads of suggestions for Sam to read out.
Well, I'll tell you what, boys. That was awful. Stephen Ratchford. Right. Chris Hill.
Of course.
Trent Waterhouse.
Trent
Waterhouse.
Right, should we do it then, boys?
Well,
right, here we go.
To be fair, we've done about as badly in that quiz as Warrington Shambles last night.
Yeah, which is funny because you were so good in the sort of training quiz we had midweek.
I know, we were absolutely on top form. Really great. Did loads of questions.
There is a difference between us, Dennis and I, not being paid £2 million a year.
That's true. Right, okay. Come on then, let's move on to the Leeds review. Okay, the Warrington team was overpaid Widdop, Wrench, Crab Metautier, triply overpaid King, young lad Ashton, getting to the N Ratchford, some fucking bloke called Williams, Philbin, Daryl Clark, Wigan Cooper, Ben Curry. Was Ben Curry playing? Did he... Oliver Holmes and an overweight Greek. The interchange bench was Bullock, Davis, Mulhern and some bloke from St Helens that they don't want. The final score was Warrington 4, Leeds 40. 8-1. Now, I couldn't be arsed, boys, putting the highlights together. I thought, let's just not go down
that path.
I'm
so glad you did. When I saw that this morning, I thought, well done. Don't bother.
I had Depeche Mode all ready to go as well because that bloke died, you know, midweek. And I thought, So let's hear what Daryl has to say. This is 3 minutes of your life you're not going to get back.
Daryl, booed at half-time, booed at full-time, fans leaving before the game is over. I mean, it has to hurt.
Oh, yeah, like hell it does, yeah. Look, that's tough. I thought Leeds were excellent tonight, but, we just, at the moment, up and down, you know. A couple of weeks ago, we had an outstanding performance tonight. We weren't good enough. We're training pretty well, but that's... hasn't converted tonight to a performance. I thought Lehman was outstanding, causes a whole heap of trouble, and we just didn't handle it well at all. And then, look, in the second half, we had 11 sets and completed 4. You ain't winning any game like that. So, you know, some key lessons for us. But, we're on a journey, and I know, look, I understand fans' frustration 100%. Nobody wants to go through what they're watching. And the frustrating thing is, you know, you see a pretty strong effort against St Helens, and then... you know, that is clearly not good enough. I'm not going to argue that away. It's, we got a lot to improve on from a consistency point of view. And it's in there, but it's not in there often enough. And that's disappointing for everybody.
So how do you explain the difference from 2 weeks ago against St Helens to tonight?
Well, I think it's difficult, to be honest. You know, I think, obviously, you know, if you look at the start of the game, I thought we started the game outstandingly well, but we get rattled and we just don't handle it well at all. And, you know, we conceded 3 tries in 10 minutes there in the first half, and then we're in trouble, you know, and we tried our best to pull it round at half-time and refocus on what we needed to do, but that clearly didn't happen. We had 11 sets, we completed 4 of them, and we made 3 errors on the second tackle in that second half, so... if you're doing those sorts of things, it doesn't matter who you're playing against, you're going to get beat. And we came up against a team who played pretty hot tonight.
Where would you say your team is from a mental point of view at the minute?
Well, it depends where we are in a game. And I think that's, you know, part of the problem is there's times in games where we're playing OK and we've got a lot of confidence about us. But, you know, I just think we've got to be more resilient within a game. And when we get put under extreme pressure, at times we hold out and we're all right, but when we concede, then that seems to happen two or three times, and that's the disappointing part of it.
Do you feel that every player of yours is buying into your culture and understanding what you want to achieve?
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going with that. I think we're in a good place at the moment. I think we've had some difficulty earlier on, which is, you know, everybody can see that. But I think we're aligned now. We felt like we were heading in the right direction. Today's a big bump in the road, and we've got to get over that and start accelerating again. And yeah, that's a tough one. We got a long week now leading into Wakefield. I've broken the season down. You know, it'll become more important than ever now, the way I've tried to sell it. I've sold it to the players, and yeah, we've got to crack on.
So were there issues in early on in the season?
Oh, your change brings that, doesn't it? Change brings that sort of stuff. But look, you know, we're in a positive frame of mind now. Tonight can't derail us. We've got to get ourselves back on track, and that starts next week against Wakefield.
Confident you can make the playoffs?
Yeah, I still think we can. Yeah, we're going to have to be better than that, 100%. But yeah, I still think we can. And yeah, we'll start next week at Wakefield.
Well, I mean, you were there, Sam. I mean, first of all, I mean, come on, fill us in, mate. Fill us in.
How to encapsulate this? I was there and I left early, and I've seen a lot of abuse by people on message boards about people leaving early. So I'll just mention that in 1996, I went to Knowsley Road and I watched Warrington lose 80-0. And a few weeks later, I went again to see them lose by 50, again at Knowsley Road. And I didn't leave early at either of those games because in some ways, the loss to Leeds yesterday felt worse. Because now they're all full-time professionals with full salary cap, marquee players, all the best training facilities. But the basics of tackling and passing are simply not there. It was awful. It was an awful display. The moment Leeds scored their second try and we came up against it, the team folded, I'm afraid. Brittle. Just brittle.
Is that the rant over with then? Is that, oh, we've got plenty more to come? How much did it cost you, Sam, to get in?
We'll get into it. No, that's irrelevant, really.
Oh, is it?
For me, none of them are playing.
For a man of my standards.
None of them are deliberately not playing well, but I called it at the end of last season when everyone was saying it was Price who was at fault. I have to mention him, Rob. And I said, no, actually, we've got to look at this players group. When the going gets tough, most of them shrink. They don't rise to the challenge, it seems.
You've brought it back to the coach, what was Darryl Powell's major message, Rob? What would you think was coming from it? You know, you're Brian Carney. He was getting pushed at the end, wasn't he? Saying, like, picked him up on a couple of points. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, the businesses I've worked in the past 20 years, we always go back to why. If we've ever got a problem, you go back to why. So, you first of all, you start at the bottom of the family tree and you work your way back. So, why did we lose last night? Well, we lost because the score was 40 points to 4. So why was the score 40 points to 4? Because the players weren't good enough. So then you say, well, why aren't the players good enough? And this is when it branches off. So you could say, well, the players aren't good enough because they're not being coached properly. And then the why to that, of course, is Darryl Powell. And that's it. It stops there. Or you say, the players aren't good enough. Why? Because they haven't been recruited properly. And then you have to ask why as to who recruited them. And I expect the answer is Carl Fitzpatrick.
I like what you've done there. You've created a little fork in the road and we're now distilling it down to binary 0-1.
Or the player's attitude is not right.
Yeah.
Because they're not bought into what's going on. So again, is that the coach or is that the player's coach. Individual?
I mean, I think there's a bit of both going on here, but I mean, we
don't know, do we? We don't know. It's just what we're perceiving.
Well, we said at the start of the year, we didn't have to be rocket science to realise that we didn't have the pack to win football games. And that's been the same narrative all the way through the season. We knew that at the start of the year. We predicted it at the start of the year that this pack would go nowhere. And it isn't going anywhere. So that comes down to recruitment. So I think 80% of the problem is through the recruitment. And that's come from, I presume, and I'm only presuming, but it's come from Carl Fitzpatrick with a little bit of help from Daryl Powell. But the coaching, I mean, last night there was a scrum at one point where they just walked in on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
That's poor. I mean, the defence has just disappeared. That's down to coaching. So I think there's a bit of both going on here. So, yeah. I mean, who recruited Powell? Who recruited Powell? If we go back another why from there, if we are saying it's Powell, who recruited Powell?
Can we just go back to that scrum a second? The scrum try conceded was very soft. Mm. But on that pitch, you've got Widdop and Ratchford, and to a degree Williams, but particularly Widdop and Ratchford, who both have played a lot of fullback and should be organising the defence. So is that because they've been coached not to put a player there, or is that because senior players, nobody's taking the lead and saying, get there, get there, get there, and organising on the pitch?
Well, I mean, you've just brought it up there, Sam, so that doesn't take much time, does it, on a Monday morning to go into the training field and say, right, what's going on? So it's not been addressed. It's just a mess. I think the best way is just, should we go through the team? Should we sort of
I've got some stats for the team? And I've got some stats for the forward as well. Yeah.
What did you make of Widdop, Dennis? I mean, last week he had a very good game at fullback, but is his heart not in it? Has he already moved to Castleford?
I think the trouble is with Widdop, he's always had that potential of, and you know, when you watched him in the NRL, he was so consistent week in, week out. He'd come over here, he's shown glimpses of that, and then never really had that consistency to go with it. And it's been like that since he arrived. So, you know, in that respect, he's not a world-class player that he once was for me.
I've got some information on Gareth, and in honour of Her Majesty, in line with what we're going to be forced to do in the coming weeks, I just want to say that his average return of kick was 16 feet and 5 inches.
All right.
That'd be 5 metres for the younger people who haven't got a clue what feet and inches are.
Oh, dear.
I tell you what, though. I mean, this must be the worst team he's ever played behind. You know, you come towards the end of your career, you could be due with been playing behind the Melbourne Storm, couldn't you? But I mean, he's played basically behind Melbourne and St George, and now he's ended up with this lot. I mean,
and maybe he doesn't want to play fullback, to be honest, because as you like to say, he gets smashed in that position. Nobody wants to get smashed.
I still think there's hope with Widdop. I think if we got on the front foot, I quite like Widdop. Wrench, again, I've got no issue with at all. He went flying down that wing. Few people criticised him that he threw that ball inside and he threw it too far.
I thought it was the right decision.
I watched it back, and I've watched it back a few times. There was no pass on the inside. Whoever was on the inside of him, I think it was it Holmes on the inside of him? I can't remember who it was. But they were about to get smashed. I thought it was a beautiful pass. To be running at that speed and to throw a ball backwards like that, it was the next play that was the problem.
Yeah, it was Holmes who ended up with the ball, wasn't it?
Yeah, he threw it. I mean, he threw it over about 4 players.
That was good.
Just while I remember, I know we had the little problem at the end with the double movement, and he took it upstairs as a try. But whilst I remember, I think he's a very good referee. I don't think the game's about him. I think he controls it well. He's not blowing up for offside. He's not inconsistent.
He remembered the rule about the medical card as well, which is the first time I've seen that. I like that.
Because they were trying to slow it down.
Yeah, Mrs. Waywell said, "What's all that about?" I said, "I don't know." They did try and explain it to me on the podcast, but I forgot.
Lots of people around me didn't understand what was going on. It was also announced that it was a green card over the tannoy, And everyone says, oh, we should be winning now. We're against 12 men.
I know.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. No, but we're professionals, lads. I mean, we see these things. I mean, this is why we've got to work. Did anyone actually get a letter in the New Year's honours list? Because I was thinking possibly after 4 years of this dedication to podcasting, one of us might get some kind of recognition.
I think after you mentioned cunts on the last episode, Rob, I don't think we're going to get anywhere with that.
There's no way to talk about Prince Andrew. Okay, moving on to Metautier. I know he crabs across field, but I think he's Powell's eyes and ears in the dressing room. I've not really got a problem with Metautier.
He was our biggest yard maker. He made 152 yards and 1 inch.
What's that in furlongs?
Have you got that by compass direction? Is that west?
No. I think. Oh, right, okay. But that was 139 metres, that was.
Toby King. Toby overpaid King.
Well, I'd like to say, looking at Toby King, he was trying, but his effectiveness was piss poor. It just wasn't there. It just wasn't going. It's just not going right for him at the moment.
Yeah, I thought on the live match he was very ineffective, but his numbers actually hold up very well. So whether it's that he's doing the basics quite well, but not giving anything extra, but his numbers hold up. He's only just behind Metautier. 136 metres. Well, that's 148 yards.
But he's not. You know, that's just that. All that is, he's backing into the tackle, going forward, and then backing in 3 metres.
I was about to say, Rob, but what he's not doing, he's not breaking through the tackle with an explosion or anything like that.
Hang on, but you've got to be careful, because this is where, you know, the collective team and getting in the right shape and everything for the halfbacks to put him in that place. Blah blah blah. That's what's not happening. His work rate, I don't think I could fault. It's just that it wasn't very, effective from the point you're making. But I don't think the opportunities were around for him to do that.
Second row is his future. He's looking more like a second row Paul Cullen every day, or a Ben Westwood. He's not got the speed to be out there on the flanks.
To be fair, I think if he looked in the mirror, he'd be disappointed if you called him Ben Westwood.
Wish we had Ben Westwood playing centre. Not good. I mean, Metautier got a lovely flick ball to Wrench at one point, just glanced the ball and sent it on his way. I just don't see it with King, with Ashton outside him. Bizarre. As for Ashton, I'm pretty sure if Ashton broke away downfield and he had to go round a traffic cone, he'd somehow manage to fuck it up.
Oh, you're on one today, aren't you?
I've had enough.
No, come on. I'll tell you the way it is. He's proven himself on the wing in terms of finishing. He's able to finish.
He can finish, and he's got bags of pace, but he's got, and I'll use an Australian term, he's got Buckley's idea when it comes to actually running downfield, drawing a man and passing. Or, again, I mean, Sam mentioned this the other week, you watch your fire, in and out, off he goes.
Yeah.
Ashton looks confused. Oh, I've gone through a gap. What do I do?
Maybe that's the training thing, where they put like Professor Broomhead on the centre spot and get Ashton to run at him and then try and sort of jiggle him around and work his way around. But unfortunately, Professor Broomhead probably doesn't run at the pace of a normal fullback.
Stephen Ratchford.
He knows where to be on the pitch. I'm going to save this. He knows where to be on the pitch, which means that he's always in those places where there's a little opportunity, this, that, and the other. But when you've got no pace, there's nothing else going to happen, is there?
He's doing too much defence. 26 tackles for your standoff.
Just on the Leeds tries. Alan London Senior pointed out this morning, it's not just the sake that Leeds are scoring tries. They were also scoring tries without anyone putting a finger on them.
Yes.
Well, yes.
That's how bad it was. And Leeds are shit. I mean, if that Rowan Smith thinks, oh, I'm suddenly the fucking Mourinho of rugby league, he's got a lot coming his way, because we made Leeds look very good last night.
Yes. Mm. Oh, we gave them a perfect boost, didn't we? We gave them a perfect boost.
Wait till they're playing St. Helens in the semi-final. Jesus. Yeah, let's see how good they are then. Right, okay. Now, apparently this bloke played in the NRL. Apparently played for Canberra Raiders. Apparently. But I refereed my under-7 soccer team this morning, and every one of them can kick a ball better than Williams.
He looks bloody lost. He looks completely lost.
Why is he kicking the ball? What a shower of shit of a performance that was. How much money is he on for that? And lo and behold, we've just sent Riley Dean off to Newcastle Thunder for the rest of the year.
That was to accommodate someone else, I bet.
So there's no pressure now. Just keep kicking it into touch on the full or putting lame kicks across field.
He doesn't look happy. Something's not right there. He does not look happy. He looks completely lost, devoid of ideas. He doesn't really do a lot of talking from what I can see to everyone. And yeah, something not right there.
What he's been paid is scandalous for what he's offering. Absolutely and utterly scandalous. Mm. And he needs to pull his finger out. Not Sam? Good enough.
I can't add an awful lot to that, because
how's the neighbour, Sam? The neighbour keeps popping in the background. What's going on there?
I brought him round to make me a Greek salad to take to. Listen, we're talking about individuals, and sport's cruel, isn't it? Because it's one of the few jobs where your performance is critiqued by people who don't know you. But it comes with the territory, doesn't it? And if you've got your hand up, metaphorically, got your hand up saying, I am a top player, I am worth marquee money, or I am worth 150,000 quid, or whatever it is that leaks out into the press, then it goes with the territory. You are going to be judged on your performance on the pitch. And if your performance on the pitch... Williams isn't a bad player, but as Dennis said, he looks lost. He looks lost at the minute, completely. Mm.
Why is he lost? I mean, this is a guy who's played for Wigan. He's played International Rugby League. He's played in the NRL. Why should he be lost?
Listen,
come back to what I said about that defence. When I'm looking at our team, I'm not sure anyone there is taking the lead. It looks to me like everyone is waiting for somebody else to take the lead. When you look back at our recent relatively successful teams, Chris Hill took the lead. Before that, Morley took the lead. Before that, Lee Breers took the lead. There was a clear leader. And I don't see that with this group. It looks like they're all looking at each other to do it. And you need to step up.
I know what you're saying, but I know you can kick a football. I've played football with you as a young lad. I know Dennis can kick a football. I can kick a football. All three of us can kick a football across field better than Williams can last night.
Mm.
It's not hard to kick a ball across field. He's training every day.
I'd go as far as to say that if someone was running at me the size of a couple of Leeds lads, I wouldn't. But I appreciate the point. The point is, he's a professional. He should be able to do it 9 times out of 10.
And he does it 1 times out of 10.
Mm.
Philbin. We got anything else to add on Philbin?
I think he's been running a bit harder the last couple of weeks.
But you know what? Now he's on Instagram and he's got his abs out every 2 seconds and he's got rid of all that body fat. He's not the player he was. He's lost 2 stone and he's not... He was a big barrel of a lad that bumbled into the tackle with a bit of weight behind him. And now he's slimmed down.
He's like a
keg. Doesn't work for him. Doesn't work for him. Right, Daryl Clark.
Oh, hang on. I mean, Sam's got something on Philbin here.
Oh, here we go.
No, I was just going to say, if you pushed it slightly, we had 6 props playing last night, if you include Magulius, who has played occasionally at prop for us. I've got all the stats on them. Do you want me to give them once we've gone through everybody?
Yeah,
or do you
we'll,
want them
get,
now?
We'll get to that. We'll get before we do the in. Oh no, we'll do them all, mate, and then we'll do them at the end and see where we're at. Darryl Clark. A few years ago, we were petrified he was going to run off to Australia. Does anyone want to drive him to the airport? Where's Walker gone? Walker seemed to be playing quite well. Nah. Start of the season, coming on, springing
through. Something's going on. Something's
is
going
he injured,
on.
Or is someone coming with some big money for him?
He was injured. Walker was injured. I thought he was fit because he was in the larger squad, wasn't he?
Mike Cooper, there he is, showing his showreel off to Wigan.
Yeah, can't fault him. I mean, he seemed to be. As he always has been, very consistent.
What an asset he'll be at Wigan when he's got his right attitude.
Yeah.
And when he's got other people sharing the load, he'll be able to flourish more, you would think, wouldn't you? You can't blame him. If everything we're hearing about this is true, you can't blame him. He's got a year or two left. He'd rather go and play somewhere with a chance of winning another piece of silverware rather than a rebuilding team who's going to be in the bottom four for 18 months.
Next guy I think needs dropping. Ben Curry. It's time he was dropped. He's not bending his back. He's not bent his back all season. We've talked about this. Get him out of the team, bring Longstaff in. Let him have a think about it in the stand for a few weeks.
I think there was
a third of the player he was.
Evidence was, I think I could use Curry as an example, but it wasn't just him. The tackling, it was all like just putting your arms out and not quite grabbing the player. It was like, you know, the effort. And I think that just shows in the effort when you look at the tackling. It was just really poor. Yeah. And there was a couple of occasions that I think it led to a try. That's why I'm picking on Curry. But there was a few players.
He missed six tackles last night. He missed more tackles than any other player.
He might be out anyway because didn't he break someone's nose last night? It was a swinging arm at one point from Ben Curry. Stopped to try. And I think there was one last week as well that he got away with. And again, it's because he's not bending his back.
It's the effort.
Holmes.
Well, I've got some stats. Yeah, I've got some stats. Holmes lost his headband at 24 minutes last night.
Oh.
Whereas the previous game at St Helens, he lost it at 16 minutes. I have noticed that this is a recurring theme, and I'd like to start the competition from here on in to see what minute that he loses his headband in every match.
So that competition will be for a T-shirt, a What Bevan T-shirt. It will go to patrons only. We'd like to know at what minute Olivier Holmes loses his headband in the Wakefield game. And Sam will be at the game timing it in Yorkshire. He's going to go across the Pennines just so he can get the adjudication on that. You all right with that, Sam?
Sam will be making up a minute, so if you can get on my wavelength, because I am not travelling to Wakefield again after the last two visits I've made there.
I thought you liked the blue ice cream.
Yeah, the Hepworth Museum.
The blue ice cream was the highlight. The last time the blue ice cream was a highlight last summer. Mind you, it is a Sunday. I might need to get out to gardening or something and make a visit.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to your neighbour. Now, you just mentioned a second ago that someone's come in to make him a Greek salad. Could you make sure that it's low-fat feta cheese that goes in it, please?
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting he's not fit, and the quicker he gives the keys back to the real estate agent so we can move in the next person into the bungalow, the better.
I thought you were a big fan of the Magoulis.
After last night, you know, we put so much time and effort into this podcast. It comes out of my pocket as well. Well, you two don't, but I fucking do. I'm sick of this lot. I'm sick of Tuesday this week. They'll all be on Instagram. Oh, look at us. Look at us in Nando's. Oh, look at us in Pitmere Lake. Oh, well, aren't we wonderful?
Maybe we could get
some pride for once.
Offer an olive branch. Eh?
You can see why there's people
you
getting...
See what you did there? That went over his head.
I know.
there's people in the stand trying to have a fight with Cooper and Curry last night.
Yep.
Because people have had enough. You'll still get the happy clappers. The 2,500 will turn up next week.
Oh, I've supported Warrington for 18 months. I'm going to be behind them.
I used to go to A-team games in the 70s and watch people with more passion than that shite that was on field last night. It's pathetic.
Are we still on about McGoolies?
As Sam said at the start, we got flogged 18-0 at Saints away that day that Brian Johnson lost his job. At least they played with some dignity and some empathy and some integrity. This lot...
I had some halloumi cheese the other day. It was really nice.
Matt Davis can't catch a cold. Now, this really gave me the goat, this one.
God.
Terry fucking O'Connor. Oh, that was a really bad pass.
I know.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
That was bollocks. Davis missing it. Bullshit. There was nothing wrong with that. A little bit high.
Professional rugby league player should be catching
it. He actually shouted for it, so he should have been fully prepared to catch it. God. It was pathetic.
But just Terry O'Connor. Oh, it was a bad pass. What's the point of Terry O'Connor? What's the fucking point? Sorry.
Today's therapy session for Rob London. He will feel so much better in about half an hour's time.
Magnum. What about Magnum?
I like Magnum. He looks great with that moustache. He's another one. He tries. He's always there. Did make a mistake. But, you know, yeah.
I'm going to take it all back. He tries. I will take it all back. Mm. He's a fellow vegan. He tries. I like what he's doing. He tries.
Have we noticed a decline in his yardage since he went vegan? Can we track that, Sam? I want to track it.
Do you want it in yards, feet, inches or metres?
No, I'm not asked. I just want to track it on a graph. Like, since he became a vegan, how far down it goes. Because I just want to know when this podcast will end, because fucking... Rob over there, he won't last much longer at this rate.
And finally, and I hear this guy's a lovely bloke. He's a really nice chap. But why have we signed a pensioner from St. Helens that they don't want? Why?
Can't answer that. Jason Clark, because, you know, it's either the alternative. Anyway, I'd just like to say Sam's
good news, Sam.
Yeah, Sam's felt
news,
really awkward through this, because we've been looking at players, almost feeling like we're picking on him, but now he can bring it all back because he's going to give us some actual stats and data.
Statistics. He's going to bring it all back and say that we're all wrong. This is it. Come on.
On a dry day, on a fast pitch, we played six prop forwards. Philbin Cooper, Bullocks, McGoolies, Amor and Mulhern. Between them, they made 138 tackles and missed 14. And their yardage, Philbin, 73 yards. Cooper, 115 yards. Bullock, 51. McGoolies, 46. Amor, 60. And Mulhern, 70 yards. Mm. It looks like they've decided that no one other than Cooper can do more than 10 minutes, so we'll have to play five other people to back him up.
Yeah, I can see what I've done there. That pencil you're using, Sam, is it a BB? And it's very big, isn't it? Do you use it for underlining?
It's one of those... lovely pencils that you can use when you're doing a bit of woodwork, you know, a bit of carpentry around the house. Put it behind your ear.
Yeah. Oh, man, you've got big ears, so I suppose it's easy enough.
Was it Russell Harty, when he was the chat show host, that used to swing back and to in his chair? Because Dennis has got a very Russell Harty swagger this morning.
Yeah.
I feel like Grace Jones. I'm really on edge.
He got Grace Jones, didn't he? Anyway, right. do you want some good news?
Oh, yes, please.
Do you want some good news? I believe the Palace are going to issue a dictate that any sporting events over the weekend should have been diktats, dictates. You see,
there's no E on the end, so it's diktat, but carry on.
In honour of Her Majesty, all sporting events are going imperial. So if we convert the score into imperial, well, Wyatt obviously scored four half crowns, so that's worth two shillings and sixpence each. So Wyre scored 50 points in this new conversion.
You know, I said we were trying to boost the lower age group demographic.
Well, this is part of the education.
Leeds are always behind in Yorkshire, so they won't realise that they've got to take on this new scoring system. So they still scored 40. So Warrington actually won 50 points to 40.
I've just watched Location, Location and seen a gay man trying to buy a house in Bramley.
Really?
Can I go back to 1971?
Ryan Sheridan. This came in from the Watt Bevan group. He always looks like he's come out of the World Nightclub at 3 a.m. after a night on the Garys.
Oh, dear.
Is he our defensive coach?
I've no idea.
Because there's more holes in our defence than his fucking bobble hat. Jesus Christ. Right, well, I mean, Sam's come out with a lot of facts and figures there, but he's got a bit of a facts and figures game of tennis on his hands today, because returning serve at the other end, here's Daniel.
With so much attention currently focused on transfers, recruitment and retention for 2023, it is maybe easy to forget that there's still half of 2022 to go before we get there. So, as we hit the halfway mark of the year, I become Sam Sankey for the day and bring you some numbers to quantify Wyre's opening half of the campaign. All stats are correct up to and including Warrington versus St Helens. At this stage of 2021, 14 games in, Wyre sat in third in the Super League table, 1 point behind St Helens and 2 behind league leaders Catalans, while also being in the Challenge Cup semi-final against Castleford. Fast forward a year though, and Wyre are nowhere near. 8th position now, 12 points off the top and out of the Challenge Cup in the first round at home to Wakefield. Wyre are responsible for 2 of Wakefield's 4 victories this season, which came in the space of 8 days at the Halliwell Jones. Let's now look at the defence, a real area for concern. After 14 games in all competitions last season, Steve Men had conceded 226. Meanwhile, after 14 games this season, we've conceded 324 points, an increase of 98. In the whole of 2021, we conceded 422, an average of 16.8 per match. We are currently on course to concede 671 all season, an increase of 8.2 per game. Now, the attack, the area that our mystical coach Darryl Powell was going to improve so much. Well, after 14 games last season, we'd scored 420. But after 14 games this season, we've hit just 280 points. In the whole of 2021, we scored 656, and we are currently on course in 2022 to score 560, 96 points less over the course of the season. At this stage last season, our top try scorer was Gareth Widdop with 10 tries, but this year, Josh Charnley and Matty Ashton are tied on 8. Interesting, given that Charnley has been out of the team for the best part of a month. Finally, big games. In 6 meetings with St Helens, Catalans and Wigan last season, Wyre won 5 and lost just 1, a home fixture against St Helens towards the back end of the season. This excellent record helped them to finish above Wigan and just a single point behind St Helens. So far this season, Wyre have lost all 5 meetings with those 3 sides by an aggregate of 144 points to 60 and are already miles adrift from these 3 far superior teams. From a serious competitor with a few flaws to a bottom half omni-shambles, the decline in the space of a year is cataclysmic.
Well, there you have it, boys. I mean, what can I say? Just to summarise Daniel very quickly, This time last year we were third. We're now down to 10th. We dropped another place last night, lads, without even Salford playing a game. Four of Wakefield's wins, two of them have come against Warrington. Last season we were conceding 16.8 points a game compared to 25 this year. 402 points last year at this stage of the season. We're at 280 points. And in our six meetings last year, Saints, Catalans and Wigan, Wire won five out of the six. This season we've lost all five.
I think that's the most stark bit, the last one, isn't it? We all know we're not playing as well, but when you see it, when you put it in that sense, it's really stark how far they've fallen in such a short period of time.
But you can see what's going on here now. I think it's this is where I mentioned a few weeks ago it's still going to be bad for a few weeks. We've now hit rock bottom of that bathtub curve under Daryl Powell. So I'm thinking now this is as low as it gets. I think Daryl knows he needs a few things to go right for him at the moment. I think that's important. But you can tell there's a change going on. And what we're seeing is a team who can perform 1 week, as he said, against St. Helens, and we can all be saying, you know what, fair play, everyone put the effort in. And then the following week, the opposite. This is a mental thing. So clearly, something's not right. Some people are unhappy. There's maybe some bad eggs in there or whatever he's got to sort out. And now he's set the ball rolling. You've got to stick with it. And unfortunately, I think we're going to see a few bad performances over the next few weeks. But ultimately, if he doesn't do it, who the hell is? And he's been willing to put his hand up and do it. So fair play to the man. And I think we should stick by him and get this shower of shit sorted out. And then hopefully next year, come out of it smelling roses. Bit like following the path of Ian Watson, really, at Huddersfield, isn't it? We could probably look at it in that respect.
Yeah.
You know what?
Can I just say I've lost the will to live?
But I think, Dennis, you've summed it up well there. I think, though, it is going to be vital that we've got three games coming up. It's going to be vital we win a couple of them. Absolutely.
Can I just point out, we've just been through the team and it's absolutely shit. And the players are all shit. And nothing's going to change, boys.
No,
Powell's
no.
Powell's pissing into the wind with this lot. You can't do anything with this lot. Nothing will change until the end of the season, until we have a mass clean out.
I've got a handbag here. You just be careful. I'm Grace Jones, Anna. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm Russell Harty. You know what? It is coaching, but you know, mentally they can perform. We've done that against St. Helens. So,
but this isn't a Hollywood movie where all of a sudden he's going to be able to turn it round and all these lame ducks are going to turn into wonderful stars.
You're right. But what we're against in the next few weeks are Salford, Wakefield, and Toulouse, who are similar to us, up 1 week, down another.
Hang on. Yeah. When are we up? When are we up?
All right, we were
when do we keep going on about this? Up.
We were up for about 15 minutes against St. Helens, weren't we?
Right, that's it, isn't it? This bullshit narrative that's suddenly been thrown by the club that, oh, it's all looking positive. All of a sudden, we're looking positive because we played 50 minutes against Saints. Bullshit!
Before I forget, though, can I just bring it back to Daryl Powell and his interview last night? I don't know if either of you noticed. I've broken the season down and it'll become more important than ever the way I've tried to sell it. Sorry, I've sold it to the players. He started to say, I've tried to sell it to, and he caught himself and changed to, I've sold it to the players.
You're like Cracker.
What are you inferring from that, Cracker?
I'm inferring from that he's not convinced that everybody has bought into it.
I don't think it was just a slip of the tongue.
I think he was being honest, saying, I've tried to sell it to him this way, and then he caught himself and said, I've sold it to them.
Okay. Yeah,
so we'll see. I think for me, this little run against Salford, Wakefield, and Toulouse, if we don't pick up a minimum of 2 wins out of 3, we're in real trouble, and it'll just get worse and worse. If we get 2 or even 3 wins, it takes some pressure off. It then gives him time to hopefully rebuild things. It takes him time to wheedle out players, yeah, or put players like Curry off for a week or two while he brings Longstaff in and see how he does, things like that. But he can only do that if we've got 14 or 16 points on the board and we're not in danger of getting dragged into that bottom two.
Yeah,
they're all wanting to have a crack at us, aren't they? Every one of them's going to want a crack at us now. Oh, here we go, correct. Warrington.
Yeah.
This is you're right, yeah. Yeah.
I've noticed something that needs photoshopping. when Daryl Powell sat in that box, it's got Hoover and their strap line is "The Way to Live." We might want to change the "Live to Lose." I think you could photoshop that just on there.
Okay, let's move on to a mid-season Twitter player vote that we ran last week. We ended up with 2,215 votes. We asked the Twitter listeners at this stage of the season who they thought Warrington's best player had been so far. We had 5 groups, essentially with 8 players going through with the highest percentages. I'll just quickly run through them. In Group 1, Holmes finished on 1%, Williams on 6%, Mulhern on 11%, Foulis won his group easily on 82%. Group 2, Curry on 6%, Daryl Clark on 11%, Cooper 21%, Ashton on 62%, Youth again at the top. Group 3, Longstaff on 11%, Ratchford 20%, Walker 30%, and Metautier 39%. That was kind of the group of death. Group 4, Magoulias on 1%, King on 3%, Bullock on 3%, Wrench on 93%, and Group 5, Philbin on 5%, Jason Clark on 12%, Charnley on 18%, and Widdop on 65%. The semi-finals saw Wrench and Ashton progress, with Metautier and Walker going out, and Thulis and Widdop went through with the loss of Cooper and Ratchford. But the final was an easy victory for Josh Thulis. Congratulations to Josh Thulis on 55%, followed by Ashton on 21% and Wrench on 17%. And there's Gareth Widdop on 7%. I mean, Price wouldn't sort of give youth a chance, Sam. I mean, I know these guys are 12 months older, so possibly it's a bit easier for Daryl Powell to bring them in. But we're all very enthusiastic about the young kids, and they seem to have bought into Daryl Powell.
Yeah, and I think in particular, our winner has shown over... I think the first time I noticed him, it might have been his debut, was when he came in late to replace, I think, Ratchford against St Helens a couple of years ago, second game of the season. We won 17-0 or 19-0. I think, Dennis, that was the game after you and I went to the Wigan match.
Yeah, I remember Sam. And yeah, I know why it sticks in your mind. It's because you spent 5 minutes trying to pronounce Thulis, wasn't it?
Yeah, and now I just say the our winner and just Josh. Yeah. but he's shown he knows what he's about. And again, go back to the theme running through this podcast this week. He is playing above our expectation, not below. A young lad comes in, he shows he knows what he's about, not just shows what he knows about, a couple of outstanding bits, the pass that he gave against Hull recently, some of the tackles he's done. He looks the business, doesn't he?
Yeah. Getting behind a big pack might be even better. Russell Harty there in the top corner. What's your thoughts? Youth winning through. I mean, you were a real advocate of youth last year, Dennis. It used to infuriate you, the fact that Price wouldn't pick the youth. And there we have it. The three top players in the vote, all youthful young boys.
I know. And you can't beat the... Oh, I've got to be careful.
Young boys.
Yeah. I'm a big... I can't say that either. Yeah.
Just say you've got COVID and we'll cut you off.
I think I think, though, if we continue on that theme, I think, like you said before, with a couple of those senior players, I'd be almost to keep that continuation going. You know, bring Longstaff in for Curry and a couple of others, just to really, you know, we're at the bottom. You just got to sort of mix it up a bit. So, yeah, it's good to see.
The production company that makes the successful ITV show Long Lost Families have been tasked with their hardest challenge to date after the producer of the show confirmed wire coach Darryl Powell had contacted their research team in a desperate hope of finding his left edge defence. Weight Watchers are set to bring out a series of Greek-style ready meals. A picture of Greece's international rugby league player Billy Magoulias was originally planned to appear on the microwave dinner packaging, but unfortunately the UK Marketing Standards Board wouldn't sign off on the proposal, saying the slimming manufacturing conglomerate was clearly promoting false advertising. And finally, with Warrington selling the rest of their season tickets at a bargain half-price discount, it is expected more offers from the club will be slashed. Rumour has it the 4020 lounge will be rebadged to the 2010 lounge and Wizzy Rascal will be downgraded to a skateboard. The Wolves forward pack too was set to be reduced to half its size. But a spokesman at the Ernest Rutherford Physics Department at the University of Manchester said it was impossible to split an atom that small.
Well, there's the news headlines. It's on to the stories. The worst-kept secret in Super League is finally out, with Warrington announcing the signings of their three new props. Thomas McKayley from the NRL side West Tigers joins immediately on a two-and-a-half-year deal, while Catalans forwards Gil Dudson and Sam Cassiano will head to the Halliwell Jones for the start of the 2023 season on two-year contracts. The combined weight of the three new props is nearly 350 kilos.
Woohoo!
It's the same weight as a polar bear, a grand piano, or you'll like this, Dennis, 18,918 Weetabix.
Oh, goodness me. That took me about 3 weeks to eat that.
I was going to... How many Weetabix do you eat a day?
Well, I only average 8 now. I'm about to cut down. I actually tipped the scales on 9.
Divided by 8. So that's 2,364 days divided by 365.
Oh, I see. I see what we're doing.
So yeah. 6.5 years for you to eat the combined weight of Gil Dudson, Sam Cassiano and Thomas McKayley in Weetabix.
If they're on 6-year contracts, then I should be able to match that. That new guy, is he going to go in the bungalow? Thomas.
Well, I mean, Sam's the man who can see clearly into the back garden, so watch this space.
Yeah, I'll get myself some new binoculars.
Is the bungalow big enough? He's got big thighs. I mean, just thinking about
three bedroom.
That toilet's got a bit
with the dormer. The dormer make it a third.
But while we're still not done with their signings, and to add even more armour to their ranks, have signed St Helens pensioner Kyle Armour. He comes on a loan deal until the end of the season. The 34-year-old 6'2", 16.5 stone Cumbrian prop has played 326 games of professional rugby league, winning both the Challenge Cup and Super League titles. Armour said, "To get back playing for me is a big thing." Darryl Powell added, "Kyle is a quality signing for us midway through the season." It is believed, however, that Armour will leave Wyatt at the end of the year to take up a permanent contract with the Sydney Roosters. Oh, no, sorry, Widnes.
Easy to see how you got those two mixed up there.
It's the bridge.
You can't make it up, can you? And in a bizarre twist to make way for Wyatt's new signings, Warringtonian-born forward Mike Cooper is rumoured to be leaving the club at the end of the year to join the pie-eating scum. Cooper has played for his beloved hometown for 14 years, with a stint broken up at the HJ with time playing in the NRL with St George. And also, in a similar fashion to Rob Butler, Ellis Robson has left Warrington for the 47th time. The young 23-year-old forward will make his way to Championship side Newcastle Thunder, as too, until the end of the season, will Riley Dean on loan. Ins and outs, higgledy-piggledy, it's all happening. Well, Cooper to happy. Wigan.
If he's not happy Cooper and it's not working Wigan. Out, then change. Yeah.
There was something funny about Sky last night when I came in and I watched the chat after the game, was Brian Carney saying to Lee Braze and John Wilkin, and Mike Cooper's obviously leaving yes. and moving to play at your
poker face.
At your place, Lee, but we can't break that news yet, can we?
Didn't Lee look nice? I thought Lee really scrubbed up well.
Much tidier, hasn't he? Now he's trimmed that beard, a lot tidier.
He's filled out a little.
When Cooper goes to Wigan, will he be putting up highlight reels from Warrington on his Instagram account? Mm. Will he be doing that?
Oh, talking of Instagram, you shared with us somebody liked something, didn't they? Felt a bit naughty.
Josh Charnley liking a Blake Austin victory Instagram tweet last night.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Might as well just go now then if you're going to be like that. Forget it.
Surely that. Can you not just terminate his contract?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Something like
because you know what? This thing is going to change, and there's obviously a few bad attitudes or people not accepting Daryl Powell's new sort of structures and whatever. If you've got someone like that in it, the best thing to do is just go the whole hog, eliminate them in terms of terminating the contract, and away they go.
Oh, not you didn't mean like Day the Jackal?
No. I was just just paying him off, and then he can go and do his own thing, and then support who he wants. It's just not worth having around.
The summer.
I mean, you can't. I mean, I remember doing work. I'm going back to working in London, and with I think it was Pepsi. Pepsi are owned by like Smith Crisps, or there's some collaboration between all these confectionery companies. And I remember being told that it was instant dismissal if you were sort of caught drinking a can of Coke if you worked for Pepsi.
Mm.
And I did work for Coke in Sydney, and on their fancy dress night in the Rocks at the end of the year, it was a bad taste fancy dress night. One of their marketing team came dressed head to toe in Tour de France Pepsi gear.
Right.
And he got fired.
Oh, but it was a bad-taste fancy dress.
I know,
he was keeping to the script.
Actually, this is a good point. This is where the CEO should step in and sort out these sort of things to make it easier for Daryl Powell and to say, right, actually, you know what? That. And the other thing, did the two of them not jump over the barrier last night into the crowd?
Yeah.
Well, that's a disciplinary, surely. You can't have players jumping over unprofessionally,
doing aggressive. Dennis, but I'd already gone. It wasn't me. Let's put that out first of all. Second, you shouldn't be doing that. But you don't know what was being said, and
doesn't matter.
I believe it was only verbal stuff.
Yeah,
there was
doesn't
no,
matter. Shouldn't be
there
doing
was no
anyway.
Threat of. No,
players
be,
not
but...
jumping over into the crowd. That's just absolutely wrong. They should be disciplined. Simple as that. Internal discipline, again.
It's almost as if we've just lost control of the players at the club. Yeah. It's really weird, isn't
I know.
It? Really bizarre.
How bizarre.
Apparently, Josh Thewlis will soon sign an improved long-term contract with Warrington, and NRL Bulldog Matt Duffy is to be announced as a wire, replacing Gareth Widdop, with speculation mounting Widdop is off to Castleford. And one final rumour, Stephen Ratchford and Robbie Mulhern will put pen to paper and will continue to be Wolves in 2023.
Mm.
Duffy got dropped from the Bulldogs.
He did, yeah.
Last night.
Any news from his agent?
Team. I've not spoken to... what was his name? The Clinton Schakowsky. I'll send him a message this week, but apparently it's just a matter of time before it's announced. Mm. So... But if he's watched the game last night, possibly he'll take up that contract with Beacon Hill, because bloody hell, would you want to go and play with that lot?
Mm.
I wouldn't.
Depends, doesn't it? You might think, do you know what? I can go in there and make a difference. You just don't know what the lad's thinking or attitude is.
You watch watch Widdop go to Castleford and become bloody player of the year. You watch. You just watch this space. He'll have a field day there for some reason. Ratchford, I'm quite pleased if they re-sign him. I mean, he has to take a lesser role next year again, but he'll be there. Robbie Mulhern, as we said, I'd just re-sign him based on the fact that he tries. Which is... Would you agree with that, Dennis? He's still with us.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about Stefan Ratchford. It's one of them ones where he becomes a supporting role, is what the way I'd put his place in the team.
Two new signings from the start of the 2022 season look to finally be making their debuts for Wire, with winger Greg Minikin and forward James Harrison set to play for Warrington Reserves against Wigan on Saturday the 11th of June. I mean, these two signings, Sam, are clearly Powell signings. I can't lay the blame at Carl Fitzpatrick on these two, so I'll be intrigued to see what they offer. I mean, Minikin apparently can't catch a cold, according to Hull KR fans. But Harrison, you know, the step up from semi-professional to professional, we might have another Chris Hill on our hands.
Yeah, Harrison was the one that was the most concerning for me, because, as you say, it's a step up from where he's played before, and you would have hoped or wanted him to have a full pre-season. So coming back from that type of injury is difficult anyway. So I don't think we should be expecting too much from him, at least until he's had two or three reserve games under his belt to make sure his knee's okay.
Following objects thrown onto the pitch at the HJ during the Wire Saints game, St Helens put out a club statement. It read, "These are mindless actions involving a small minority of our St Helens fans, and this is not acceptable. The club continues to work with the relevant authorities to ensure those responsible for such disorder are held to account for their actions. These irresponsible people will be issued with life bans and could also be subject to police prosecution." Now, you mentioned this the other week, Sam, that, you know, something needed to be done at Warrington. And there we have the visitors coming to the Halliwell Jones, and straight away, a strong club statement comes out. Life bans. What's happening at Warrington? Putting out statements like that?
Well, I've not seen it, but then again, I didn't go looking for it. So I'm sure we have made a statement. But my worry for us is that it's been repeated in that area of the stadium several times over a couple of years. That's my worry about Warrington. It needs to be stamped out. And zero tolerance, really.
Do you think there's a curse in that corner then, that stadium, where it makes people go mad?
Should I take my dog to have a wee in it to see if I can,
I think it's just generation after generation of inbred fuckwits, to be honest. The pie-eating spineless scum managed to sneak a win against Huddersfield. I'm just on one tonight, aren't I? I really am. Very sharp.
Yeah.
They snuck a win against Huddersfield in the Challenge Cup final, 16 points to 14. Unfortunately for the Giants, Lola Hia missed four kicks at goal. The match was played at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in front of 51,624 spectators. We've had a couple of complaints this week. I hate to say this on Patreon. Sam mentioned last week that the pitch was the same size as the Halliwell Jones. Yeah, he was correct in what he said, because Sam mentioned that the game has been played at Wembley last week, apparently, in the recording, and it was played at Tottenham Hotspur.
Of course, yes. I'm an idiot. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
We'll be refunding the Patreon people. Well, Sam will be refunding the Patreon.
But apparently the Tottenham Hotspur pitch is the same size as Wembley, therefore I was correct.
Technically right. Yeah. Very good. Tenuous.
Which is the better venue? We put the vote out there. Wembley came in at 47.5, Tottenham at 52.5. But we did also put the feelers out to the scattering of rugby league journalists that survive in this day and age. And they all agreed. Every one of them said that...
Did he?
Tottenham. Yeah, did he? Let's not pluralise it. Yeah, he said that it was better. Even Ralph came back with quite a well politically worded statement to us, but basically said something like, we'd had a fun day or something.
When's he coming on?
Can we get Terry O'Connor on instead?
No, no. It would just be very abusive.
And to highlight the inconsistencies of the match review panel and refereeing, Leeds Rhinos back row thug James Bentley has been banned for only 3 games after a vicious high shot on Wakefield's Thomas Minns. Bentley had already received a 4-match ban earlier in the season following a high tackle on Gareth Widdop and a 2-match ban following another reckless challenge in the Leeds Castleford game. Bentley will have missed 9 of Leeds' first 17 games. Referee Campbell, officiating only metres away from Bentley's latest high shot, only gave Bentley a yellow card. And to add more discombobulation to the bizarre ranks of officiating, Morgan Smithies has received a 4-match ban following 2 high shots in the Challenge Cup final. He was not cautioned for either high tackle by referee James Child during the game, but the review panel flagged up both incidents. I mean, you'd be pretty pissed off if you were Huddersfield. You know,
I thought
the
second one in particular was awful, where he came from behind high. It was very poor.
Why isn't there someone in the box having a word with James Child in his ear and saying, whoa, 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 whoa? Because, you know, play on in the NRL, but we can take it back. You know, level of professionalism has gone to a far higher calibre than this. Cost Huddersfield the match. And how does Bentley, when he's already been sent off twice for incidents, end up with a lesser fine than the first one? I tell you what, I'm going to burgle a house and I'll get 15 months, but then I'll do another one and only get 6.
It keeps going down. So in a few years, you'd just be doing it as a job. Oh, dear.
You couldn't fart in round one without getting a yellow card.
Yeah. And they were defending it as well, saying like,
it'll be the same all year. It'll be the same all year. Don't you worry about that. I told you this, Neil. I told you this when we got into the Labour Party.
But it didn't end up like that, has it? It's gone completely the other way. I've had a whole packet while we've been talking of sugary sweets.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm off my fucking tits.
Right, Tackle Box. Thank you for all the lovely comments from everybody for the last one, if you remember. Don't switch off. There's some interactive content today. So following the recent complaints from the fans regarding the beer served at the stadium, I've been researching beer quality. My first port of call was to immerse myself spending the last week tasting a variety of beers, otherwise known as a bender. I also purchased a Timothy Taylor mini keg of Golden Best, to trial the tips and tricks of maintaining good beer quality. So I've got myself this little keg. I thought I'd look into it and then see, you know, where they're going wrong at the Halliwell Jones. So first thing you've got to do
did you take any instruction from a book to do this?
Well, yeah. I'll come to that. As a slight change to the section this week, rather than using a one book or a particular source, I thought I would compile research to potentially release my own book called Waywell's Amniac of Noble Kegs. Now, to start things off, I thought, who better to contact than our part-time, tight-as-shit sponsors, Timothy Taylors? Unfortunately, they were not available because it's Jubilee weekend. So anyway, I'll run through some facts about keeping beer in good health, a little quiz for the boys, and then some recommendations at the end. Now, cask ale, or real ale, as it was first coined by Camra in the 70s, and I'm going to use real ale. I'm not going to use that carbonated bullshit that chavs drink, so I'm just going to stick to proper ale. Now, cask ale, unpasteurised, unfiltered live product. As we all know, it's best kept in a barrel or a keg. What is the name of the person who makes wooden barrels? Do you remember?
Cooper.
Cooper. There you go. And barrels have since been replaced by kegs, which sounds like a euphemism for the Warrington Wolves front row this year, doesn't it? You know, we mentioned it earlier on. It's a bit of a continuity there for anybody listening still. Here's the quiz.
Oh, the neighbour's back in. Neighbour's in the background. Sam
is he back?
Just appeared again.
Yeah. Does he want to play the quiz? Right, there are five barrel sizes, and I want you to guess the number of pints each holds. And we're going to start from smallest to largest. The smallest barrel is called a pin. How many pints would you get out of a pin? I'll start with you, Rob, and then we'll go higher or lower. Rob.
Rob's Googling.
I know he is. I've just stopped
Yeah,
him.
But I've not got my glasses on, so I can't see it. A pin. Oh, it doesn't sound many. But this would be an actual pub, would it?
Yeah.
You'd find this barrel in a pub.
These are the four or five official sizes.
It could be. Stop putting your fingers up, Sam. What's he doing there?
I don't know.
It's probably like the one you get round the St. Bernard. So I'll say four.
4 pints. What about you, Mr. Sankey?
That's what I was putting up for as my guess. I'm going to say six then.
No.
So, just point out to all the listeners that Sam's now doing visual numbers, helps on a podcast.
Yeah, for all our fans. that's actually 4.5 gallons, 36 pints. So we're going up from here. So you're way off.
Is that a standard? That's not a standard.
Yes,
keg,
it's
though,
a standard.
It?
Yes, yeah, these are different ones.
Is it
the next
called a
one,
pin, is it?
Yes. Yeah. The next one up is called a firkin. How many pints does a firkin hold, Mr. Sankey?
56.
Okay. Mr. London?
Wasn't there a pub in Leeds called the Flea and Firkin or something? Yeah. There was, wasn't there?
See, this is where all the pub names come from, I think.
First one was how many?
56, he said. Oh, the first one was 36 pints.
Oh, I'll go 72.
Oh, he's bang on, 72. I think he's caught the theme. Now, the next one is a Kilderkin. How many pints is that holding, Mr. London? I'll give you 5 seconds.
148.
Mr. Sankey?
144.
He's correct. Okay, and the next one...
Bollocks!
This is about maths. The next one is called a barrel, and it holds... How many, Mr. Sankey?
288.
My guess first.
And the last one, first one to shout it out, is called a hogshead.
Don't use your phone to multiply.
556, something like that, isn't it? 564.
Mr. Sankey can come in.
Keep going again. 576.
Well, you're actually wrong, because the last one is 432 pints.
Oh.
What's lower?
Yeah, that means Mr. Sankey wins the barrel quiz there, so that's good. Now, I'm going to carry on. Part of the barrel brewing process...
What's this got to do with a book?
I'm compiling my own book from all this research I'm doing.
Doing your own book.
Part of the brewing process to finish off ale is what... They add something to it called fining. And now this is basically added to attract the remaining bits of yeast, and it helps clean and clear the beer. Now, the most common use
is
called...
Fish guts. Didn't you fish guts and stuff like that?
He's jumping ahead. He knows his beer finings. No, you're fine. Sorry. The most common is called isinglass, and it's a collagen derived from swim bladders of fish. Historically, it was farmed from sturgeon, but more recently, cod and hake. Basically, fish guts. So you are right. Which is ironic, as the toilets at World of Spills smelt like that for years, didn't they? Really? So actually, beer, in this sense, isn't vegan-friendly, Rob, either.
That's why I don't drink it.
No, but Timothy Taylor's, in the last 6 months, have just changed their finings.
Vegan beer,
to vegan. So that it must be... Basically, it's some shitty chemical instead. Anyway, so let's have a look at looking after beer. Now, one of the reasons why beer tends to go off is that you don't handle it well. And that's one of the first ports of call, is that you, when you receive your barrel, you've actually got to sort of like make sure that you look after it. And the first thing is that you, once you've took it down into your cellar, the conditions need to be right, temperature and so on. Now, the cask needs to be stored on its belly, and it needs to be set at 20 degrees. So that's the actual sort of seating. And they usually put them in these little sort of stool things that with a cushion on it. If they're really looking after it. Keg holders, that's probably a thing. You leave it for 24 hours, set at the temperature of 11 to 13 degrees Celsius. And then when you, after 24 hours, you can then tap the cask and then leave it for another 48 to 72 hours. And you mustn't touch it whatsoever. You may be able to just let it stand. Now, there are three common complaints for ale. Flat, like the Warrington Wolves performance, and that's when you've had it too early or too late. So that's probably something there. And sour, after 5 days it starts to deteriorate. So if they're trying to leave the beer to make it last longer. And I asked, there is another complaint. And I remember asking this in Leeds in the original oak. I said, oh, this Tetley's is looking a bit murky. I was told to fuck off, that's part of the character. So I didn't really have a reason for that one. Now, of course, one of the biggest issues is cleaning the pipes. Now, this was mentioned a few times on the Twitter posts from the game and people not being happy with the beer. Now, whether a cask, ale, or it's a fizzy shit, the equipment is one of the main contributors to ruining beer. Now, research in 22,000 pubs found many landlords are not cleaning their pipes properly, which can lead to a build-up of yeast and bacteria. The beer quality report found 40% of pubs in the southwest serve polluted beer, while Wales came in second at 39%. Meanwhile, the northwest featured 29% of the landlords not cleaning out their pipes properly. Now, the beer's really, it's pretty unclean as it goes through those lines, and it adds a slight sour, vinegary flavour due to the acetic acid that's built up, and a buttery flavour from a chemical called diacetyl. These deposits begin building up in a matter of days. So you have got to do it quite frequently. And when you think about match days could be 1 or 2 weeks apart, you know, and all that process of how you receive the beer, setting it up the beer and cleaning the pipes and everything, it means that, you know, there's quite a lot of stuff that needs to be done as part of that process. So my conclusion and investigation into the Halliwell Jones beer quality, I've written a statement that will serve a purpose of not only addressing the quality of the beer, but also the quality of the Warrington Wolves team performance. And I didn't realise until I wrote this, but this is what I've put as my summary. It's going to take someone to take charge and organise a systematic approach to completely overhaul the structures that are contributing to the poor quality of product that we are experiencing on a regular basis. This will require training and direction to improve the channels of delivery and flush out the contaminated lines that are causing a major build-up in unwanted elements that contribute to a distasteful product. I think that quite sums up nicely the beer quality and the Warrington Wolves performance quality over the past
few months.
It's
almost like the two things are running in parallel there, Dennis.
It is. So I did have a mention. Professor Broomhead did come back and stated that he will personally sample every pint at the next game as part of the new quality control procedures. And as a result of which, the club have also confirmed that they'll be putting an extra beer tanker on standby for the professor's new quality standards.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. Everybody knows your name. You wanna go where people know. People are all the same.
Can you believe it? First Channel 4 takes out a Super League deal, and now they've chosen our fine establishment for their romantic first dates rugby league edition. Now, have you made sure each table has a candle? We want to create a sexual ambience not seen since Eddie Waring wore his cod piece in It's a Knockout.
All the candles are lit, Ralphie, but they're only creating a sporadic, limp, dull flicker.
Oh, well, that's no way to talk about George Williams.
I've seen more illumination, Ralphie, coming off the floodlights above the Wilderspool railway end.
Wait a minute, Daryl. Where's that French bloke, Fred, gone from off the telly? He doesn't seem to be welcoming the dating contestants at the front of house.
I've replaced him, Ralphie, just like that, with the club's old acquaintance, Durain Gusset. Oh, we still had a shirt to fit him.
Oh, that's excellent, Daryl. I'm so pleased we ordered an entire box of small to mediums. They fit the entire forward pack. Now remember, Dazza, we want tonight to go off with a bang, both metaphorically and, dare I say, literally.
Yes, yes, Ralphie. I'm armoured the evening with enough large sensual props so the night goes off with a bigger bang than when the Luftwaffe dropped the bomb on Gartens.
And also, let's make sure each couple are given a complimentary free bottle of wine.
Is it time to change the barrel, Daryl?
Oh, there you are, Cooper the Cooper. Bring up three cases of our finest 1987 Times Square Chateau de Slappers.
I'm just about sick of this, Mr. Powell. Do this, do that. You're the worst landlord I've ever had. It's all work and no play on your watch.
Now, less of the dissenting voice, Mr. Cooper. If you could get me an extra bottle, please. My car radiator's completely out of antifreeze.
Hey, Ralphie. Look at that couple sitting in the window. They're heavy petting more than a couple of spotty chavs at Wollstonebaths.
Why, that's our celebrity gendered compliant couple, Daryl. Lipstick lining and makeup Makinson.
That's all very well, Ralphie, but have you seen what they're doing with their cheesy meatballs?
Oh, ain't that nice? Is that why they've both got a semi on?
Nah, Ralphie. That's a bottle of Shiraz.
Oh, and who's that behind the bar chatting up the females?
Well, that's our ladies' man, Ralphie. Overpaid, pin-up barman, Toby King. Oh, not another glass, Toby. He hasn't juggled and caught a decent cocktail, Ralphie, for 18 months.
Oh, my loose arm. Who's that little man serenading the tables, Daryl?
Well, that's the Primrose Pimpernel, Jason Clark. I told him to sell as many primrose roses as he could, Ralphie, during his 11-minute stint.
Yes, he's been a real thorn in our side.
Hang on a second, Ralphie. Who dimmed the lights?
I think you'll find your affairs has slipped over your eyes again, Daryl. But nevertheless, it's an excellent idea. Move Professor Broomhead in the front of the camera lights to create a romantic solar eclipse. Now, are we making sure that all the lovers, Daryl, are sharing from the dessert, Dolly?
Absolutely, Ralphie. Although Cook Westwood informs me he's run out of chocolate and choux pastry, so he's come up with a substitute.
Ooh, what's the alternative?
Sausage eclair baguettes.
Oh, tackle sacks. Oh, talking of puddings, I told front of house Mr. Fitzpatrick to make sure the pantry was fully stocked. You know, he really is a bit of... Oh, we really must get that fixed, Daryl. Oh, the night's libido, Daryl, is turning out to be limper than a Phil Ford bandage following a muddy bath away at Runcorn Highfield.
I wouldn't worry, Ralphie. The condom machine in the gents is jammed again anyway.
Oh, don't tell me Philbin's filled it with his wanking socks again.
Actually, I'm finally starting to get into the feel of beers. I love the updated script. I'm not totally a fay with Channel 4's first dates, but I shall track it down and binge watch it just based on that little 5 minutes I listened to. Also, where did the idea that an employee in Cooper the Cooper not being totally happy with his lot, where did that idea come from? That was inspirational, that. Will he soon be applying for a job in the new flash refurbished wine bar in the next village, will he, or what?
Well, yeah, it could be in the Pie Arms.
Ship Wetherspoons.
What? Oh, no, hold on. What did you describe Wigan as? Something, yeah.
Oh, dear. I tell you what, while we're on air, boys, I've just noticed Josh, basically this morning, Blake Austin put up an Instagram message sort of saying that we're not out of the woods yet, but definitely found a path, to which Josh Charlie wrote back, "What a man." So we put it up and we said he's not even supporting the team he plays for anymore. And we've heard from Josh already. So now he has blocked us, so I can't really see it. So I've had to go onto another account.
Oh, so when you say we've heard, you mean you've heard, as we just like to distance ourselves from the next bit.
He says, "Listen, you are clueless." And I have to say, he's put the apostrophe in the right place. So well done, Josh. "So stop writing shit. I'm gutted I'm not involved anymore." Well, you are still involved, Josh. You're just not playing. "But I have mates at other clubs, so keep your long nose out of my business."
Well, I thought Twitter was a public thing. So if you're going to post, or Instagram, sorry, it is a public thing. So it's everybody's business when you post it, is it?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But apparently not, according to Josh.
Okay.
"I'm fully committed to the team till my last day. Repost this weapon. Repost this, you weapon. Oh, repost this, you weapon." It's not what? Put a hyphen between repost. I'm not quite sure what he means at the end. Exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Is he coming on for an interview?
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
It's on to the predictions. We've just one game to predict, with Warrington heading for Blue Ice Cream to Bellevue when they take on Wakefield. The game is being played on a good old-fashioned Sunday with the traditional afternoon kickoff time of 3 o'clock.
That's great. Now, you know before what? Go on to that, I think if you got up on Sunday morning, Sam, had a nice cooked breakfast, go for a walk, take the dog for a walk, then drive over to Wakefield about 12, 1 o'clock, go to the Hepworth Museum, have a stroll around there, have some light lunch, and then you could just drive back.
He looks up for it, Dennis. He looks up for it.
know. 3 o'clock kickoff.
I think that holiday's done you the world of good, actually, Sam. You seem to be radiating today. It's like he's got a little bit of sun coming in from the window there. He's smirking away.
Yeah, exactly with himself. Good. It's because we're finishing recording in a minute.
Right, let's hear what the HAL computer has for the prediction.
Hello, my name is HAL, the Watt Bevan computer. May one take this opportunity to wish Her Majesty congratulations for her platinum jubilee. And let's not forget, apart from being our head of state, she's been a wonderful mother. And it's not her fault one of her children turned out to be a massive nonce. Here is the prediction for round 15. Wakefield, 16. Warrington, 24. Thank you, and God save the Queen.
Now, I should probably point out first to the defence of the Watt Bevan panel. They actually gave their predictions about 10 days before every game, just because the way the podcast falls. So they put those predictions together prior to the Leeds game. I'm sure they'd all like to change them now.
Yeah, I've seen one of them mention that they're only going to score it in multiples of 40 for the next couple of games.
Well, with the benefit of hindsight, of course, we've obviously seen the last night's debacle. I'll start with you, Sam. Where are you going on this one?
Wakefield 40, Warrington 14.
Whoa, I like it. Strong. Dennis, can you beat that?
Yeah. Wakefield 14, Warrington 40.
Jesus. Hope they clean those lines before whatever you've been drinking down there in the south of England. Look, I think Wakefield will do us one here because clearly they're going to have seen the way that we played last night. They used the forward, battled against us last time. I think it's one asset that Wakefield do have, and playing them in Yorkshire at 3 o'clock on a Sunday. I'm with Sam. Possibly not as bad as that, but I'll go Wakefield 24.
Yeah, I think we'll bounce back.
Warrington 16.
Yeah, we'll bounce back. There's going to have to be some really serious discussions this week on about you either get on or get off, like we've discussed. And I think those who get on will prove a point against Wakefield.
Okay, that's it. We'll be back after Warrington have ventured into Yorkshire. So until then, from my two jubileeing podcasters, it's a changing of the guard and a trooping of his primrose and blue colours from Sam.
All the best.
A fondling of his crown jewels and a fingering of his Paul Cullinan diamond from Dennis.
The senior.
I'm Rob London, perched on my throne, waiting to be overthrown by the Roundheads. You've been listening to What Would Oliver Cromwell Say? Sam, could you take Just Charlie for a coffee?
But whatever we talk about is not going to you to post all over Instagram.